It is time for us to recognize that the fundamentals of healthcare in many ways will stay the same, but they will have to change to accommodate what is an unknown, but becoming fairly understood reality that whatever it is, it'll be worse than it was before, and our challenges are going to be greater.
Hello and welcome to Hims Guest. I'm your host, Jonah Comstock. I'm joined today by Laura Lovett, Managing Editor at Moby Health News. Hi, Laura.
Hi, happy to be here.
We're going to be talking today about the State of Healthcare event, an hour and a half long digital event that happened this week with Hims and some of Hims' partners. We're going to be looking back at some of the presentations, some of the data that was shared, and talk about the highlights. And then at the end, I'll have a special guest, Hims CEO Hal Wolf on, and he and I are going to talk just a little bit about what to expect at part two of the event, Future of Healthcare. So that's what we're up to today. And Laura and I both tuned in and viewed the event. And really recommend checking it out for yourself as well. So, Laura, what were some of the biggest takeaways that you saw in this and like things that really took you by surprise or caught you off guard?
Yeah, so I sort of covered the patient perspective. One thing that was really interesting, it was that 60% of patients want to return to their pre-pandemic experience. And it's interesting because we've been hearing so much about this telehealth shift and, you know, telehealth has really shaken up, the way we do healthcare now. But it's interesting that the bulk of patients are actually looking for that brick and mortar experience. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the data is showing that younger patients are more likely to be interested in using telehealth beyond the pandemic, where older generations, so the silent generation and the baby boomers, are looking to use in-person services and sort of return to that status quo. So I thought that was really interesting. And also, you know, hearing from patient advocates a little bit about sort of the pros and cons of telehealth and how, you know, the healthcare system has really been shaken up by it. So Stacey Hurt, who is a patient advocate, was talking a little bit about her experiences with telehealth, both in the pandemic and before. And one of the things she said was, you know, she has a son with multiple disabilities, and they were going to 60 doctor's appointments before the pandemic. And actually in 2006, she was saying he was trying to get diagnosis, and that's when she was going to those 60 visits. And they couldn't use any computers to do it. So they were going to all of these visits in person, and he has a wheelchair, taking someone who maybe has different autoimmune complications out of the house can cause a lot of challenges where, you know, using telehealth was great for someone like them. But then sort of on the other side, she talked a lot about, you know, cancer patients. She's also a cancer survivor. And she said that a lot of patients with cancer weren't able to get critical treatment that they needed in person. And then the other thing was they weren't able to have preventative care too. So, you know, it was, I think she said it was like 80% down for looking at screenings and things like that, which could later down the line cause a lot of issues. So there is that in-person element that we really can't get rid of in healthcare as telehealth becomes really, really popular.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I kind of thought generally came out of this event, you know, was supposed to be focusing on what's the current state of healthcare to set us up to talk about where we're going. Was this idea that like, we've been talking a lot for a long time about how COVID pushed some things forward. And I think telehealth is the big leading example, but it didn't push everything forward. You know, there are some things that, you know, didn't really get that push. And so now we're at a place where the technology, digital health, you know, and advanced health tech is just kind of uneven. And what really stood out to me was when Tom Kusa from Chartis Group was presenting their data, he talked about patient portals and about online scheduling, and only a third of hospitals are using patient portals. Only 40% have online scheduling. And even with those that do have online scheduling fully implemented, less than 20% of visits on average are scheduled that way. So to me, those seem like such low hanging fruits. I mean, that's like, you know, even more basic than telehealth. There's, you know, no reason we shouldn't have been doing this for a long, long time, but at a lot of places, those still aren't implemented. And I feel like that kind of ties into what you were talking about too, with this notion that like, it's not so much that the technology isn't there, but that we haven't yet kind of gotten smart about like what technology we should be using all the time, what technology has like a time and a place. It's a lot of mixed bags is what I was hearing.
Yeah, you know, something I've been thinking about a lot is obviously we live in sort of a digital health bubble where, you know, most of the people, at least as a journalist that I'm talking to every day, know what digital health is. They know, you know, what's going to go on in the future. We're talking about VR, AR, all that kind of thing. But if you look at it like on the day-to-day level, I think it's really important to take that step back and talk about something like scheduling, which is sort of a low-hanging fruit. And it's not this like high-tech glossy thing, but actually could change care for a lot of people. So I think that's really interesting. You say that, and actually it goes back to one other thing that Stacey Hurt was saying was, you know, you know, there's a lot of shiny object talk. And so going from that to what actually patients need and, you know, keeping that always front of mind and things like affordability, access, that kind of thing is really important. So,
yeah, absolutely. What I'll be really interested to see is that this picking up this conversation and there, I think this was addressed a little bit on the panel, but you know, taking this data and saying, okay, so what's going on here and how do we get past it? I know that the Chartis Group said that regulatory and reimbursement was identified as sort of one of the biggest blockers to implementing the technology that people are excited about. And then physician buy-in was the second biggest. So I feel like that is a little bit of a picture of what's happening here. But to me, it doesn't feel like the whole story either.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think, you know, one of the things, there was a speaker from Atrium Health, Dr. Scott Miller, and one of the things he was talking about was during the pandemic, putting physicians as leaders. And so instead of all these, you know, initiatives sort of coming at physicians, actually having them be the ones to be making those changes. And I wonder if that's, you know, again, always going to the end user in mind, if that would make, you know, technologies a lot more accessible. Also, just, you know, if you're the ones implementing them, then you're a lot more likely to use them. So I don't know, like just the way that we do implement technology changing too, maybe based on COVID.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of desire to like capitalize on the amount of change that has been catalyzed by COVID and try to see if we can, you know, reverse engineer, find out why that worked that way and how to make it work, you know, in these other areas where maybe change still needs to be catalyzed.
Yeah. And there was a lot of discussion about like, you know, COVID fatigue and everything, you know, we did all these changes based on COVID, but does the actual patient want those changes in the future? Or is it like, okay, we did this for a set amount of time. Now let's get back to normal. And I think that right. That's, yeah.
That's a conversation so many industries are having, you know, workplace, you know, do we go back to the office? How much do we do over Zoom? Education, very much so, you know, what worked, what didn't. So I think we're not alone in that, but what makes it feel so different from healthcare, and maybe this is just my perspective because I've known about health tech and been writing about it for so long, is this real sense that, you know, there were these technologies that we were trying to get going and we were frustrated that they weren't catching on. And then COVID sort of has, you know, done that catalyzing in a good way, as opposed to something like education, where I don't think a lot of teachers were thinking, why aren't we doing more classes over Zoom? And then COVID came along and, you know, I don't think it worked that way, but that is very much how some people felt about telehealth and about things like remote patient monitoring, which, you know, always had a real adoption threshold problem. So,
yeah, you know, another interesting thing that was talked about was AI and machine learning and accessibility amongst patients, which I thought was really interesting. And basically 50% said that it felt like Big Brother, which I get, like, that's also like, you know, all these shiny technologies again coming at you. And I could totally see that. But when they were actually asked about specific use cases, then patients were a lot more accepting of that. So, you know, I think the most popular were for detection and prevention. And it was really interesting to see, well, actually, you know, if you talk about the specifics, it's a lot more like, okay, what can, is Lauren Goodman, who's a director at HIMSS. Yeah, she was saying like there's this idea of what can this technology do for me. And I thought that was a really interesting way of sort of flipping it and looking at it.
Yeah, for sure. Several of the speakers talked about AI machine learning, and then both in, you know, from a provider perspective, you know, both Tom Kisa and Daryl Gibbings Isaac from Accenture. And it seemed to be the same kind of idea that people are bullish about it and excited about it in a general way. But then when it comes to really specific questions, like, you know, are you actually using it and what are you using it for? And when do you plan to use, you know, start using it more? It seemed like people were not like, people didn't have that concrete relationship with AI and machine learning in a lot of ways. And one thing that was really interesting to me, maybe not surprising, but interesting to see it spelled out, was this notion that, you know, people are more bullish on AI for operations and admin and back office and less so for clinical use. So there's still this sort of, we trust the machines, but do we trust them quite that much? Do we trust them enough that, you know, we're going to put people's lives in their hands? And that's an old story with AI. And I think it's a story that's still happening.
Well, I think, I mean, the healthcare space has so much with accountability, right? Like that's always been a big part of healthcare. So when you start making a machine responsible or accountable, I could see that coming up with a lot of issues, and particularly, you know, looking at it from a doctor's perspective where, you know, how much trust can they put in this machine versus themselves? Like that's a hard one. And then same for patients. Yeah.
So we should talk about money a little bit, because there was a lot of discussion about the financial situation. There was some discussion about, you know, what's going on with payers. And they obviously had Mario Schlosser on the panel, who also was on our podcast just recently. From Oscar Health, of course. And yeah, I thought it was interesting that, you know, the data sort of at one point, and this is Daryl Gibbons Isaac again, he said that, you know, that we did see this loss in financial stability, especially early in the pandemic, but now we're starting to see what looks like a recovery. You know, we may have reached the nadir on that. And so I thought that was interesting. And in some ways, you know, it ties into what we were talking about before about COVID and like, how much do we want to go back to what we were doing and how much do we want to learn lessons and move forward? You know, it's great that hospitals' finances are recovering. Did they really learn anything? Have they changed, you know, their dependence on fee for service and on, you know, elective surgeries to pay for things? Or is it just that now people are returning and so they can still make money with the old arguably flawed business model? I don't know. What do you remember anything from the panel that ties into this topic, Laura?
Yeah, maybe something going on Oscar Health. I think it's really interesting hearing from an insurtech company too, where they have not only, you know, they're kind of a direct to consumer or more like a small employer focused health insurtech company, but also they have some of their own providers in that virtual environment. And something that came up was, I think it was like 45% of the people who ended up getting virtual PCPs through Oscar Health's virtual platform did not have a PCP beforehand. And so it's interesting if, I wonder if insurtech companies are going to become a little bit more provider payers, and if that's sort of a future that we could see, and then maybe that also kind of changes how finances are done, right? And it changes the fee-for-service model a little bit if your payer is your provider. So I don't know. It just got me thinking. I wonder if that's something that's going to happen in the future.
Yeah. That also reminds me of another thing that I found a little bit interesting that was in Tom Kisa's data again. This notion that, you know, they asked hospitals who their primary competitive threat was, and they're still saying it's other hospitals, you know, and they asked that question, you know, to get a sense of whether it's like urgent care centers or, you know, CVS or Walmart or these payer providers or, you know, the One Medical groups of the world. And the consensus was that those threats are rating higher than they used to, but they're still not, you know, perceived as an existential threat.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting too, going to sort of the telehealth theme, you know, how many of these hybrid, I'm really interested in hybrid care, and how many of these traditional providers, now that legislation has sort of been going the way of telehealth, will continue to have that telehealth focus? Or do you think afterwards, you know, I mean, the pandemic's sort of winding down, but will they go back to that fully in-person care to sort of get more, you know, fee-for-service model, I guess?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's going to be really interesting to see. So hopefully we'll learn a lot more about those sorts of things at the Future of Healthcare event, and more generally at HIMSS 21. There's going to be a ton of panels and conversations, both at the in-person event in Vegas and at the digital, focusing on some of these topics and really looking at how healthcare is changing and needs to change. Well, thanks so much, Laura, for coming on and recapping the show with me. I thought it was a really good event. I really loved that it was rooted and driven in data. I think, like, as journalists, that's so refreshing to see, when we're not just talking, a bunch of talking heads talking about being talking heads, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it was nice to, it was actually a pretty big sample size. So at least for patients, it was over 2,000 people. So that was really nice to see sort of a cross-section there. And it was also reflective of census. And I really liked that too, just to know it's a little bit more representative than just our, like, health bubble, I guess.
All right. So now I'm going to play back a conversation I had earlier this week with Hal Wolf, CEO of HIMSS. Hal talked to me a little bit about what to expect at the Future of Healthcare event on the ground in Las Vegas. So we've just discussed a little bit about the State of Healthcare event. Awesome event, great data. And the next part we have to look forward to is we'll hear from some of the same folks in Las Vegas at HIMSS 21 about talking not about the state of healthcare, but about the future of healthcare. So I have with me Hal Wolf, CEO of HIMSS. And Hal, tell me a little bit about what we mean when we say the future of healthcare in this context. Is this about bells and whistles and technology, or is this about more like systemic or structural?
First of all, Jonah, great to see you, and thank you for having me. It's a good question. I think part of the answer depends on where you're standing. And by that, I mean you can see actually both taking place around us at HIMSS 21. You can see bells and whistles, and I think they're going to be a part of our lives. But more importantly, you're also going to see the systemic, and you're going to see the structural components of healthcare really starting to change at a faster pace than they have in the past. There's no question in everyone's mind the pandemic had an impact on how we thought about virtual care, how we thought about care in general. But I think what we're beginning to recognize is that our systems have been working on a very carefully balanced capacity plan against the expectations from an actuarial standpoint of very long-term projections of age, of health concerns regarding our fundamental issues of comorbidities and what the challenges are. That model's been disrupted. We don't even know to a degree where it's going to end. We know we have millions more patients all around the globe who are coming into our environment sicker than they were before. They've gone through the pandemic. They may not have gotten the treatment they wanted, or they had COVID-19. So there's millions and millions of people coming into our environment that are going to have big challenges. And so our systems that were overwhelmed before are going to be even more overwhelmed in the future. So we know this is coming. It is time for this systemic change. It is time for us to recognize that the fundamentals of healthcare in many ways will stay the same, but they will have to change to accommodate what is an unknown, but becoming fairly understood reality that whatever it is, it'll be worse than it was before, and our challenges are going to be greater. We also have more financial challenges. So I'm looking at it absolutely that we have to approach this from a systemic way. I don't want to take anything away from the bells and whistles, because what we see as bells and whistles today will be our standard model tomorrow. And I was trying to think just the other day of some comparisons that might equate. And I remembered 10 years ago, which scares the heck out of me, there was the car show, the Detroit car show, and Ford almost didn't go because their statement was, and they did wind up displaying, but they went to CES instead or in conjunction because they said, we no longer produce cars. We produce environments. And those environments include these special cup holders and how fast and multiple ways can your seat be created and the sound and the ambiance around you and the integration of Bluetooth and the computers and all the things that we see in our cars today, even in the most basic models, were considered complete bells and whistles a few years ago in the manufacturing world. So how did they get there? Well, they got there by understanding the customer, understanding the client, understanding where the market was going, and beginning to integrate those bells and whistles as a part of the standard environment to create this new surround space that also took you places.
That's such a great comparison. And the technology just got better too, right? I mean, back then the GPS might drive you into a lake and now they're very reliable. And when you think about that as a corollary to AI in healthcare, that's one of the things that, you know.
That's exactly it. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. And so I think many of the aspects that we're looking at today in this introduction of AI, which is getting more and more pronounced, and the more and more data that we have that will help it come along, will actually let it succeed. Coping with the expectations of the consumer, which now have been changed, and also recognizing this tsunami, which is coming, which used to be just the, you know, the gray haired, the silver tsunami coming, now with the COVID tsunami coming right behind it, a systemic change is absolutely necessary. The neat part is, and you just touched on it, is that the technology around us, that's not going to be our inhibitor. It's there. We know how to deal with this, whether it's going to be on a laptop or a iPhone or, you know, an Android or whatever the case may be, or the device or on your wrist or however that may be. Then how do we build it into the processes? How do we train our people and how do we get them there? So no matter what you do, there'll be blocking and tackling that comes with it. And that is like super exciting to recognize that we recognize that. And it's happening at scale. And so much of what we've seen now and what we've heard at HIMSS 21 and what we've heard around us is people saying, okay, I get it. I get it. The strategy is changing dramatically. Where do I take it? How is it grounded? And in the future, it's really got to be grounded on these two wonderful things, which is what have we learned? And what do we know that's coming? And how are we going to measure how people react to it? Because if we take it back to that car manufacturer, right, they've added a number of things and they've taken away some things, but then the technology that made a difference, it's gotten better and better.
So just to end us off here, anything in particular you're excited about at Future of Healthcare? Any speakers or highlights you're looking forward to?
Well, I have to tell you, I've gone over some of the speakers, of course, that are coming, and I was fortunate enough to see them in advance. I don't want to play favorites because I will tell you that that's not a good place to be because if you leave anyone off, there are a couple of favorites of mine in here, but really there are two major groupings. You know, one is in the findings and they're around clinicians, health systems, patients, and payers. And these are observations, research that's taken place, findings of what's coming. They know what that is. And then the second part of it is around the reactions that follow the same methodology, health systems, patients, clinicians, payers. So there's a really cool balance going on, which is what do we know, what have we learned, and how are people going to react and have they reacted to these new technologies? So if you're sitting there from a system standpoint and you're thinking about the reaction and where I'm going to go from a health system standpoint, you know, you're going to listen to Tom Keesaw from the Chartis Group. I've known Tom for many, many years, absolutely brilliant strategist. I appreciate him, his insightful thinking about that outside in approach. And then you spin right around to Atrium Health, who are taking that same piece of health systems and looking at it from a reaction standpoint. And how is that coming at us? And you look up at Scott Rissmiller, who is going to look at this from his position as chief physician executive, you know, at Atrium Health. That's just one example. And so you're really going to get it from both sides. You look at the patient consultant of Stacy Hurt, and on the patient side, on our side, Laura Goodman, who's our director of market intelligence at Hims. So I think you're going to find this incredibly balanced environment. It is absolutely future looking. It is based on information, research, as well as this understanding that those bells and whistles need to be systematically nurtured, brought along, and meet the expectations of that consumer, that patient, that citizen, that individual that wears all three hats when they're sitting with us.
Thank you so much, Al. Really appreciate your time and hearing a little bit about what's coming up.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Laura. Thank you, Hal. And thank you all so much for tuning in and listening. I hope you'll all join us in online or in person if you're comfortable for the HIMSS conference in August. And stay tuned for more previews on our information brands and the websites. We'll include some links to our preview and post-show coverage of State of Healthcare quite a bit. It goes deeper on some of the things we talked about and maybe even some things we didn't get around to talking about. And until next time, keep innovating, keep being a healthcare change maker.